March 22nd, 1989, I'm Frank T. Hilton interviewing Mr. J.T. Henderson in his home concerning scouting and other things that he's done with his life. Good morning, J.T.
Good morning.
You were telling me yesterday a story about a group that won a contest. Would you mind repeating that for me?
Well, in the 20s, I don't know, it seemed to me like it was about 1928, the Scout Council had a contest here for among the different patrols and the different troops, and they were to choose four patrols which were going to be given a free camping outing in Junction. This contest was based on attendance, good turns, advancement, and things which had to do with scouting, of course. And there were four patrols which were the eventual winners: the Red Rooster Patrol from Troop 1, the Lion Patrol from Troop 2, and the other two patrols, I don't remember their names. There was one from Troop 3 and Troop 6, and we got to go to Junction.
How'd y'all go to Junction?
We went down there in trucks, and a couple of cars. We camped out at first right in Junction in the park, and then we went over on the river south of town where we made our camp. Real nice place, and we stayed down there several days. One of the highlights of this camp down there was our journey up to 700 Springs, which was quite a undertaking, since you had to walk along, and about every 100 yards you crossed the river and had to take off your shoes to wade at these low water crossings. But finally we got tired of that, and we didn't bother to take our shoes and socks off. We just waded, and coming back we decided we weren't even going to mess with the road. We just waded the whole river all the way back to our camp.
How far did y'all go up the river?
Oh, I would say it was probably 5 or 6 miles from where we were camped. And but we had a real good camp, real good.
You remember any of the kids or the adults that were on the camp?
Well, of course, the fellow who was at that time was serving as assistant executive here, C.B. Foster, who had come here originally with the Montgomery Ward Company. And he'd been interested in scouts in Waco and in Austin. But he was one of the adults. The only ones of the kids I can remember much is Jack Lewis, who was in Troop 3, Homer Jordan, who was in Troop 1, Harry Benson, I believe, who was in Troop 6, and a fellow named Fant, a boy named Fant, seemed like his name was Cheryl Fant, who was in Troop Troop 6.
You were a member of Troop?
Troop 2. And Gordon Buttery went on that trip. He was my patrol leader. And
you don't remember any of the others from your patrol?
I can't remember any of the rest of them. Been too long ago.
Did y'all cook out?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. We did our own cooking and everything.
What kind of tents did y'all use in those days?
Well, most of the time it was the old wall-type tent, you know, that we had, that would hold about pretty good-sized tents.
They'd 8 or 9 people?
Well, usually we'd put one patrol of 8 kids in a tent. Now, we had some big old tents that they used to use for the to cook in when they first started having scout camps here. They were those big 16-foot square tents like the Army used that had the high sidewalls. Made a pretty good, nice tent, you know, for their cooking. We had a real good time down there.
And see, they were dirt roads, weren't they?
Oh, yes, yes.
Did it rain on you?
No rain. The weather was real pretty.
Did y'all go for a week or just a weekend?
We went for about we were down there about 5 or 6 days, and there were some of us, I know that I and Jack
Lewis.
Jack Lewis, and seemed like there were two or three of the other boys. We went down a little bit earlier with C.B. Foster and helped set up camp, you know, where we were going to camp. But
was there a scout troop in Junction then? Do you remember?
Well, I can't remember.
Whether y'all had any interaction with
them?
No,
I don't think. I'm pretty sure there was, because that was one of the places where that I know when I was in the exhibition troop, we made a couple of trips to Junction to help farm troops, and I was thinking that up until here, just a few years back, that troop that was formed in about 1927-28 by the exhibition troop was still in existence.
They still have a troop in Junction. Troop 420, I believe, is its number.
I can't think of the fellow's name that for years that was scoutmaster down there. He was a school teacher, pretty sure. But anyway, but I don't remember our, you know, having anything to do with the troop down there while we were on this camp.
You mean the other camp outs similar to that y'all went on and participated in?
Well, not like that. Of course, when we first started scouting here, there really wasn't much else to do. There was no soccer. There was no organized baseball. There was no track, summer track. There was no basketball, anything like that. So scouting was pretty much the only thing we had to do.
Could you describe San Angelo as it was when you joined scouting?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably about 20,000 people. And Van Buren out here was the west edge of town. There was nothing past that. Now, East and North Angelo was pretty much like it is, still like it is now. It's grown some. But the west part, there were only four elementary schools. Santa Rita was the first school that was built in addition to the four schools that had been here ever since the early 1900s. But it was pretty much a cow town and a farming community.
Was there still dirt streets?
Oh, yes. In fact, where I lived on East Beauregard for a while, that street was dirt, and Harris was dirt. And
except for the immediate downtown area.
Yeah, which was paved with those old wood blocks, you know. And I know when I first joined Scouts, we went on weekend camps, overnight camps, two, sometimes three weekends a month. That's what anything else to do. And
did y'all take adults with you or just kids?
Well, yeah. One of the places where our troop used to camp was the old fairgrounds. Most people don't even know where that is. But it's out opposite St. John's down on the river. And when we used to go camping out there, there used to be some of the old corral posts and things like that that were still, you know, there's still evidence of them. But
right on the river out there.
Right. And then there was another place that we used to go on 29th Street up by this dam that's up there, that little low dam. We used to go up there. Of course, at that time, that was a pretty good ways out of town. We used to hike up there. And Twin Mountains was one of our favorite places to go. We always were a little intrigued by the fact that we had heard that there was buried treasure out there. We never found any. But
just constantly looking for it.
The camping was real simple and real easy then, because there were so many places, the town was so small, there were so many places that now are inside the city limits that we used to go camping. Now, Ben Ficklin was another one of our favorite places to go, because it was within easy walking distance of town. But the town was you know, just really quite small. And
were there many automobiles then?
Well, yes, there were quite a few. However, there were a lot of people that still drove horses and carriages, surreys. I know my mother used to always drive a surrey. She just didn't like cars at all. And cars were not like like they are now. There was, they were still quite an oddity, you know. I mean, we kids used to more or less kind of gather, use like, well, I guess you'd say you would kind of like collecting things. We were always telling somebody that we had seen a certain type of car, like a Marmon or a Rio Speedwagon or a Duesenberg or something like that. And cars then, of course, it was real easy to more or less separate them because they were so distinctive. Now they all look alike, you know.
In those days, they were all black, as I
recall. Right.
What did y'all do for recreation? You were in scouting, but they didn't have any swimming pools then, did they?
No.
What did y'all do for swimming and sports?
We swam in the river. In fact, I passed life-saving. I finished up my life-saving merit badge out above Ben Ficklin Dam there. I had started that year at scout camp, and I didn't get to finish it. And so we finished it up above Ben Ficklin. But the only swimming pool in town at that time was the one at the country club. And we swam in the rivers, and Ben Ficklin was a good place. It was kind of a dangerous place to swim because that water all above the dam was deep. There was no beginners or any area like that. But we played baseball. Now we had quite a few baseball teams. I know the elementary schools had baseball teams. And
was that the most popular sport? Baseball?
Well, really, I guess it was. Now we used to mess some with track. But we didn't have any coaches as such, and it was more or less something we did on our own. But we did play quite a lot of baseball, basketball. The only time I remember playing basketball much when I was a kid was down at the old Scout Village. They had a basketball court down there, and we used to play a lot. But we used to hunt, fish, of course, a lot of places to fish then. The fishing was very good, and hunting, as far as hunting was concerned, I used to come over close to Paso de Vaca over there and hunt rabbits when there wasn't any, there were no houses over there.
Were there a lot of trees once you got in the rural area?
Well, there weren't as many as there are now. Along the rivers there were trees, but you can look at some of the pictures of the early 1900s, and they didn't have the trees that they have now.
It was just open country.
That's right.
With cactus and yucca plants and
mesquite. Right.
Mesquite.
Along the rivers, they had live oak and pecan trees, but not in the residential area at all, not like they have now.
What kind of meals did y'all eat when you went camping then? Because you didn't have all the
prepared food
that you have now.
Like I said one time, the meals were pretty bad. Our camping was not too good because the fellow who was in charge of our troop was not much of a camper. And
who was that?
Cullen Cole. And he used to go with us a lot, but he wasn't much of an outdoorsman. As far as camping out, we had no tents that were belonged to the troop. The food, you had no freeze-dried food at all. Now we used to have some dried beef that we used to buy in the store that tasted kind of like beef flavored cardboard. And then you had a few stuff items, you know, like macaroni and stuff like that, and dried fruit. You could get dried fruit, but as far as that and sleeping bags were unheard of as far as we were concerned, and also the fact that there were no ice chests. I don't really remember. So you had to take stuff that was either canned or
raw, like potatoes and carrots.
That's right.
Things of that nature.
But we used to, for the first 6 months, and I know that we went camping so much, no one had ever told us that you needed a ground cloth under you, so it was a time of freezing to death at night, you know, and I used to think that camping was a contest between you and nature. as you sat there, no one had told us that you needed dry wood to build a fire. You know, we filled it out of green, pretty smoky. And you'd sit there with the, squatted down by the smoking fire with the water running down your neck. And the food would end up half cooked, half raw. And it was a matter of you versus nature, and nature won most of the time. But after a while, we finally, you know, learned the hard way that to take a ground cloth and to put more stuff under you than you had on top of you. And also, we got where we could, you know, cook pretty good.
Did y'all take axes? Y'all didn't have bow saws then.
No, no. We took axes and hatchets and
chopped everything inside.
But we finally learned that squaw wood was the way to go. This thing of standing there chopping on a log for 30 minutes was for the birds. We finally learned you could break off more than you could possibly cook. But in all the years, I guess we were lucky. We never had anyone that had ever got burned or had, you know, chopped a toe off or something like that. But the equipment that we had as a troop was pretty skimpy. I mean, each patrol in our troop, we had four patrols, had an axe, maybe a couple of hatchets, and the boys nearly all carried pocket knives. That was before the days of so much of the big sheath knife, but
no tents.
We'd either squat around under a bush that we'd thrown a blanket over to kind of protect us, or you just got wet. But it was, we thought we were having fun, and we were.
How many were in the troop?
We had about, seemed like when I was in there, we had about 35, 36 boys. It would fluctuate, you know.
How many would go camping?
Oh, nearly everybody. That was, of course, there wasn't anything else to do, and that was a big deal.
So you'd have a large group when you went every weekend?
Yes.
20 or 30 people?
That's right, because there wasn't anything else to do. I mean, that was it.
That was a weekend.
You could go to the show then. Pretty cheaply. I know most of the kids used to go down to the old Crystal Theater. That's down there close to where Miss Hattie's is now on East Concho.
Yeah, it's but across the street, wasn't it?
No, it's right there, right near Hattie's. And there was another, a Lyric Theater across the street over there.
That's a vacant lot there now,
yeah.
I believe, where that theater
But that,
is.
You could take a quarter and go to the show, and you could buy a sack of popcorn and a Coke and get in the show and have a nickel left. And but things were cheap. Gosh, I used to caddy a lot at the country club, and I'd work all afternoon, make 50 cents.
Where was the country club located?
Still out here where it was.
Where the San Angelo Country
yes.
Club is
uh-huh.
now. That was out of town then, wasn't
oh
it?
Yes, long way out of town. In fact, when I was in Scouts, one year, Bryce Draper, who was the scout executive, had this thing that decided on this thing that he called a beeline hike. And you had to, he gave you directions, and you started off, the troops did, and each troop started off in a little bit different direction. I mean, from a different direction, out to this central place where we were to meet. And it was out close to the country club. But the idea was that you took a compass and they gave you headings periodically, and you were supposed to go in a straight line. Now, if you came to a big patch of cactus, of course, you walked around it. Or if you came to a hill that you couldn't possibly climb, you went around. But the rest of the time, you were supposed to go in a straight line. And I know we got out there where about where Lake Nasworthy is now. And that was just the river then. There was no lake there. And the idea was to get across the best way you could, because there were no boats, no nothing. Well, most of the guys in the various troops would take off their clothes and wad them up in a bundle and go swimming across. And the only equipment we carried a first aid kit for each troop, and then most of us carried canteen. But there were two other boys, and I decided that that was for the birds. We weren't going to take our clothes off. So you had to use stuff that was natural. We took those old reeds and cattails and made some, I guess you'd say, kind of a temporary rope out of it. And we lashed two logs together and got a straddle of those things, and we're going across the river. And we just threatened any person that even touched our raft, see, and we really giving them the horse laugh about, boy, here they were, dumb people, swimming across the river. We got right out in the middle, and our ropes broke, and they deposited us in it. And, of course, we had our clothes on. And I never will forget when we went up to where they were having this big barbecue for us when we finally got there. Bryce Draper wanted to know why we were so wet, and we told him, well, we perspired a lot. But we had a lot of interesting deals. We had another deal where that kind of a funny thing where they had an old boy here whose dad was in aviation, and he set a trail for us. He and another guy went up in this plane, and they threw out these sacks of lime. About every, I don't know, so many seconds, you know, and you were supposed to follow those things. But, you know, that kind of stuff. Scouting was pretty primitive as far as what you have now, because there were no facilities like that.
I know your camps that you had were very simple affairs. They didn't have anything but a dining hall built sort of like a rifle range are today.
That's right.
A roof with posts on the
big old cedar post with just a roof on it, and made out of sheet iron. But the tents, most of them that they used, and I don't know of any troop that had their own tents. Now, there may have been some, but most of ours were the old wall-type tents.
There are a few pyramid tents.
Yeah, and they...
I think they were World War I surplus.
They... But even at camp, a lot of times, the first camp or two that we went on, they had... You know, had cook tents, and when you went to do KP, it was KP. It's not like it is now, where you go up, and, you know, put a little silverware and stuff on there and things like that. You went up and you peeled potatoes and you did everything that they wanted. In other words, for the loon meal, you'd have report for KP about 9:30.
You were an assistant cook.
That's right.
What did y'all eat for camp? Mostly stews and meats and.
Well, yeah.
You didn't have a whole lot of meats. So what I read, you basically had vegetables for lunch.
They had the first camp, and I meant to ask Dwight Hunter and Ford Bulwer about that, was if they remembered. The first camp we went on was out here at Cristobal, and this old man that had a cafe there, they hired him to do our cooking. His name was Van.
That was Geronimo 1, wasn't it?
That's right, and the food was absolutely terrible. And the kids really gave him a hard time. They'd sing this old song of Old Man Van is a dirty old man. He washes his face in a frying pan. He'd get mad, and one night, for the evening meal we'd eat, and all the kids were giving him a hard time, and they just made a big old circle about like a lynch mob around him. And he was standing there, and he had about a 10-pound sack of flour in his hand, one end open. And he started just turning round and round, throwing that flour all over everybody. But food wasn't too bad, but, you know.
Basic food.
A
lot of potatoes, I suspect.
Well, and they used to feed you a lot of prunes, because that was one of Bryce Draper's big deals, was staying regular. Of course, the kids could have cared less. Now, I like stewed prunes, but most of them didn't. But what they would do, your patrol leader would check, and if you didn't eat your prunes, then he had to turn your name in, and you had to go down to the hospital tent, where they would give you a dose of Epsom salts and castor oil. And it didn't take long for the prune consumption to really increase after you took a dose or two of that. Go ahead.
Were the early camps sort of run like military camps, more than what you know as scout camps?
Well, yeah.
What did you do at the camps? What was the activities?
Well, we had pretty much the same thing. We had swimming and life-saving and canoeing, and they usually had various types of handicraft. Now, one of the things on the early camps that we used to do that I don't guess they've done it in years is that you had to have guards at night on guard duty around your camp area. Two boys would be on guard duty about 2 hours, and it started at 11 o'clock at night, each 2 hours, so you change guard. But you would be on guard duty around your camp. Now,
what was the purpose?
I don't know. It's kind of like a military deal. But I'll never forget down at Camp Geronimo, no, Kickapoo. We were in this big grove of trees, and I always think Bryce Draper and some of the bunch started this rumor that there was some strange animal running around down there. Well, Gordon Buttery and I were on guard duty about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we'd gone into this latrine, and which was open. It was just built up with sand. And it had this old smoky lantern, you know, that you could do good to see 6 feet with it. But anyway, we started out of this door, and the moon was shining with clouds. And just about the time we started out, we saw this great big white thing about, looked like it was about 75 feet away, just looking straight at us. Well, it scared the bejabbers out of it. And finally, we found out what it was. Oh, it was a horse that was grazing. He put his head down to graze, and he'd raise it up. Of course, one time he looked like he was 5 feet tall, the next time 7. But we just knew something had got us. But it was more military, I think, than the tents. They used to have whitewashed rocks, you know, to line your walkways, and they were very military-like in their inspection, and they used to do quite a an elaborate thing that at the flag ceremonies, you know, they had a regular deal that they used, but it was more. Now there was no drilling like that, but we did handicraft. We had archery. And
everybody brought their own bows, didn't they?
That's right. That's right.
And their own arrows that they
made. I know that one year at one of the camps, I think Neil Sanders came out there, and he brought a bunch of lemon wood staves that they make the bows out of, and we made bows, and some of them made some pretty good bows out of them. But the swimming was done in the rivers.
Rained every summer.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Camp Connolly was so bad up there that Troop 7 was kind of isolated over on a part of the river, really, that was turned out to be just an island. The water was, and they would come across the river to eat in their canoes, and for about 2.5 or 3 days, we didn't have anything because they couldn't get to us.
With food?
Except ice cream, and I got so sick of ice cream, but it was, you know, after all, we didn't know any better. We thought we were having a great time.
Well, you probably were.
We were.
You know, being with each other and doing things that you normally didn't do, things of that nature.
But the kids, we had a few that of course, it's like human nature to gripe. We had a few that gripe, but most of them, you know, it wasn't too bad.
I got the impression you had two types of kids in scouting then. One group was gung-ho, and the other group was just there.
Well, we had a lot of kids that were really outstanding scouts, turned out to be. And I know we had one or two kids in our troop that I think the main reason that they went to camp was that their dads wanted them to go, that they really didn't care much about it because they just, you know, it was just something to do to pacify their parents. But me, boy, I thought I just really did. It's all I dreamed about was being in scouting. And I know I was so worried that I had my grandmother be sure to check to see that I could get in scouts, because I was really wanting to get in so badly. But when they first started scouting here, Bryce Draper, they had this big old area down there, along there where the Central National Bank is now, was where the fire station was located. And right next to that, they had this big area that looked like it was about half a block, grassed-in area, and that's where we used to have our field meets or camporees or whatever they called them. And, but I never will forget, before they really started the scouts here, we would all meet down there with our parents, and they had the great big kind of a, like a an archway built out of a scout oath and the 12 parts of the scout law. And Bryce get up there and lead us in songs and everything. And man, I tell you what, like I said one time, I kind of thought that guy could walk on the water. But we were so eager to get in that we started off with about 7 troops. And we had a good turnout. Of course, I guess looking back, it didn't seem like there were a whole lot of kids in scouting, but it seemed to me like that everybody I knew was in scouting then, because, as I say, there was nothing else to do.
What can you tell me about Bryce that you remember?
Well,
about his personality.
I'd have jumped off the cliff, that guy told me, but there was one thing that he always used, a little saying that he always used, like if he gave you a job to do, he'd say to you, it's you and me mostly. And I never will forget, for years I used that with the kids in my scout troop, and they got word that some of them that turned out to be scoutmasters would use it for theirs, so I always thought that, but Bryce, he had the ability to really generate a lot of enthusiasm among feel the heat back there? Yeah, I turned that thing on last night. He had a lot of character traits that I really liked, because
what were some of those character traits?
He never did take the attitude that he was an adult and you were a kid. He always kind of treated you like an equal, and he figured that if he treated you like that, you were supposed to act like one. So you always felt like that it brought out the best in a kid. You made him kind of want to probably do a little bit better than he would have done normally. But
he was a disciplinarian.
Oh, yes, yes. No question about that. But I think that I know in my case, I really liked that part. You know, I thought, well, shoot, since you're in scouts now, you're supposed to act like a scout, which is, you know, supposed to be a little bit different from a regular kid. But
did he wear his uniform all the time?
No, he didn't wear it all the time, but he wore it most of the time. I know when it seemed like to me at that time, for a while, the scout office was in the courthouse.
It was.
And I never went up there that he didn't wear it. And he was always a good-looking fellow. And I always thought he was, well, like I say, I just thought anything he said was the gospel truth, and I tried to go by it. But I know that we had so many of the kids in scouts then that were really older boys. We had 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, and they all thought a lot of Bryce. And you think somebody that age, if an adult has got to be or something special to make any kind of a impression on kids that age, because they take the attitude, you know, another adult. But the camps, I always thought the camps were
well run,
were great. Of course, I didn't know any other kind, but I really enjoyed them. I went on every camp they had while I was here.
You left here in 1930. And how old were you then?
Well,
were you in high school or junior?
Oh, no, I was in high school. I was a junior in high school. And I left here 2 days before school started in Wink. And
by that time, you've been in scouting about 4 years.
4 years, right.
You've been an Eagle Scout 3 of those years. Or
well,
2 years.
Yeah.
You got it in
28.
Late 1927, wasn't it? Or
no, I got it in 28. In fact, Gordon Buttery and John Logan and I from Troop 2 all got our Eagle at the same time. And
how were the courts of honors then for Eagle? Do you remember?
Oh, yes. In fact, the one where we had ours was up in the district courtroom in the
present courthouse?
Yeah.
It was a brand-new courthouse
right
then, wasn't it?
And it was quite impressive, because it was nice. Now, we had several courts of honor that we attended. They had them on the steps of the courthouse, or would have them out, you know, like that. And then seemed like one time, I remember, our having one over there where they used to have the field meets. The only thing about that was, if for the adults attending, you had to always had to go get a bunch of chairs, you know, and benches and stuff. And on the steps, they could sit on the steps. And I know we had, seemed like we had one or two there, but most of the ones that I remember were, they held them in the courtroom.
Must have been pretty crowded.
Well, like I say, kids, there weren't as many kids then as there are now. There are only seven troops. And in fact, after it wasn't too long, there were only six, because the troop that was sponsored by the Standard Times, I don't know, it never did do very well. But
it was probably made up of carrier boys.
Well, yeah.
And then as they dropped out or ceased to be carriers.
But it was, I know they had a lot of ceremony, or seemed to me like they did, when they had a court of honor.
A lot of pomp and circumstance.
That's right. And most of the people who were the presenters were people that were very, very well known in the community, you know, leaders and like Houston Hart and John Y. Rust and people like that you really felt like were really something to get your award from them. But, go ahead.
What was the Eagle ceremony like?
Well,
what do you remember about it?
I know they got us up to the front, and they read a little kind of a history of our scouting experience, or what we've done in scouting. And then they would ask us. In fact, the Eagle ceremony, as I remember, was more like an Eagle Board review now than it was then, because they would ask you a lot of the questions, you know, what you did, what you enjoyed in scouting. And I know that...
Who pinned the badge on? One of the men of the community?
Yes, yes.
Glover or
now the
Russ?
They didn't do it like they did now. In fact, it seemed like to me that Mr. Schuber, Sam's dad, was the
council commissioner.
And I think that he pinned our badges on us. But now they didn't have the deal now like they do now where the mother pinned it on. We would have, now we didn't have troop courts of honor at all that I can remember.
District courts of honor.
It was always district, right,
honor.
Right. And then once or twice at camp, they'd have a court of honor down at camp, which they would usually have it, you know, in the dining hall, and have somebody, some dignitary, like if some kid, say, from Junction or somewhere, they'd have somebody from Junction to come up to present him with his eagle. But it was, of course, to me, just being a kid, it was always quite impressive for when a guy got his eagle badge, because that was something, you know, that it's like it is now. It's quite an accomplishment.
You keep referring to Gordon Buttery, who was your senior patrol leader, and I assume was a little older than you were.
No, not really. I knew Gordon after my mother died. I came and lived with my grandmother to finish out the school year, and I got acquainted with Gordon then over at Fort Concho School. It was South Ward then, and he and I were real good friends. And then I moved back to Tolya, but the next year when I came back, my grandmother and them had moved over on College Street, West College, and I went to West Ward. And but then, by that time, they had started scouting, and I joined the troop at First Christian Church, and Gordon was in there. And he was my patrol leader, and he was, I guess he might have been maybe a year older than I was. I don't think he was very much older, because we were in the same grade in school. But
what kind of kid was he?
Oh, he was... Well, he was one of the smartest people that I have ever... good artist. I used to think, I wish I could have been able to draw like Gordon did.
What was his favorite drawings?
Well, he used to like, I know when we were in over Fort Concho or South Florida, he used to do landscapes in pencil and in charcoal, and he was darn good.
What grade was it?
About the fourth grade. Third grade. Yeah. We used to kid Gordon, because when we'd go to summer camp, I think Gordon was the only kid in camp who ever wore pajamas. But he was just that kind of a kid. But he was a good swimmer. He and I really got along well together, and I enjoyed being in his patrol. But he was patrol leader of the patrol when we went on that what they call the trail camp down at
Junction.
But he was the one that when they were choosing a scout to go with Bird to the South Pole, you know, he was the one chosen from this council as a representative, what was the guy's name? Paul Seipel.
Yeah.
He was much older than, seemed like to me, he was 17 or 18 at the time, and Gordon was just too young, but he was
well respected in life.
Oh, yes. In fact, he was just really an outstanding kid, and it was, you know, so tragic when he died that
when you're talking about personalities in early scouting, some of the men that you remember that were active in scouting and their personalities, and you as a kid, your remembrance of them. You talked about Bryce Draper.
Well,
some of those.
Mr. Rogers, who was scoutmaster of Troop 7, was always impressed me. Mr. Schubert, who was the scout commissioner here. Neil Sanders, of course, Neil was really one of my favorite sort of guys, because he was always doing something for scouting. Some of those fellows.
What about Neil Sanders? What can you tell me about him? I know he started the San Angelo Archery Club. The Boy Scout Archery Club. What kind of group was that?
Well, it was kind of anybody, it wasn't just one troop. Anybody could be in it. That was something else that I really loved was archery. And boy, when he started that thing, I just couldn't wait to get a bow and start shooting. I think I told you about the fact that Neil and his dad owned a big furniture store, which is down there on East Tuig, where the parking lot is right there next to the old Federal building. That was where their store was. They sold beautiful furniture, and that's where the archery club used to meet. And I told someone that I still shudder to think we would go down there and we would maybe be doing something like fletching arrows. We'd take the glue and go up there and sit on those big, fine, expensive couches and chairs with that darn glue. If we'd have messed up one, we'd have been paying for it yet, you know. But Neil was always coming up with something. He was the one that made the totem poles, you know, king totem and queen totem.
How were those totem poles?
Oh, they were made out of telephone poles.
They were made out of telephone poles.
Pretty good size. Now, the king totem, which Troop 3 won, he had finished it. Well, he got the idea it would be fun for the kids. And when Troop 2, which I was in, won queen totem, he had left it partially unfinished so that we could finish it up, you know, and do whatever we wanted to as far as finishing the thing. I don't think we ever did, because we just didn't have the tools and things. But it was pretty well finished, all except for a little bit of 3-foot piece on top.
Where did y'all put these?
Right by our scout cabin.
Front of them or side?
Kind of one side, you know. But Neil was always working with the kids on their kites. fact, he sang in the choir down at the church for 67 years. And he'd still be singing, except he said he couldn't get up the stairs anymore. But Neil was a kind of a guy that I think all the kids loved him.
He was not an outdoorsman. He
not much. I don't ever remember his ever going on a...
He said he didn't go to the summer camp.
No.
And he didn't like to camp out.
No, he sure didn't. But boy, he did a lot of other things that made up for it. There were quite a few of the people that...
You remember any of the other scoutmasters? Rogers and Sanders and... Or they just really didn't make that big impression on you?
Well, of course, the guy from Troop 3, you know, Louis Houston.
Louis Houston.
There was a fellow who was scoutmaster of Troop 4, and I think he was the preacher here at the time. Out the First Baptist Church, his name was McCall. He was a real good, or what I would think would be considered a real good scouter or scoutmaster. I can't remember.
They were just names, faces.
Right. Too much. I don't remember even who was the scoutmaster of Troop 6. But the guy that made that thing go was old Harrison Clary. He was really an outstanding kid. And if it hadn't been for him, I think the troop would have folded up years ago, you know, because they just didn't have anybody that could work with it. But I can't remember too many of the other guys that through the years. We had several down there at Troop 2.
When you were a scout?
Yeah, we had a doctor for a while, and Cullen Cole, and Ralph and John Logan's dad used to work with us some, you know, down there.
Did the scoutmasters stay very long as scoutmasters, or there was a constant turnover of them?
Well,
apparently in your troop there was.
Yeah. Well, some of them, Mr. Rogers seemed like stayed for several years. I think he was still here when I left.
He was scoutmaster of two different troops.
Yeah. And then, I don't know. I can't remember back then
was there a distinction between the rich kids and poor kids in those days?
Well, yeah.
I know not all of them had uniforms.
I know, we always felt like that two troops in town that had the wealthiest kids were Troop 3 and Troop 7. Now there were some, in Troop 1, there were some pretty wealthy kids like the H.C. Noki and some of those kids. But, there was a distinction. Troop 7 had the Horton boys, which used to be Horton, Yagi, and Kenley, you know. And they had the Niblin boys. There were three of them. Their dad was a doctor here. Jerry and Boyd and Fred. And then Luther Coulter. His dad had kind of like a department store called Coulter's Arcade. Jack Lewis was in Troop 3. His dad was a doctor. Most of the kids in my troop were just, you know, just ordinary people. The folks were kind of poor.
Did everybody have uniforms, or just part of them had uniforms?
Well, most of the kids had uniforms. Kind of a mixture. I believe it was at Gordon Buttery's funeral, we walked from town to Fairmount Cemetery, and some of the kids wore the old uniforms that, you know, that wore the long stockings that looked
World War One type.
Well, yeah, and, well, they were regular scout uniform, but they had the stocking, but some of the kids wore shorts because that's all they had to wear. But most of the time, kid wanted to, now I know Cullen Cole used to help the kids, and they could come up and help him a little bit, and he'd give them enough money to buy a uniform. And they were pretty well. Now, another thing they used to do at camp, which that most of the time the kids wore their uniforms to camp. You know, now, of course, they wear blue jeans and everything, but most of them, they didn't have blue jeans then. And it was the equipment that was available then is nothing like it is now.
Well, most kids didn't own anything besides a mess kit and a canteen.
That's right.
And then they had blankets they used for camping.
Oh, gosh. I had one of those old World War I mess kits, you know, and some surplus stuff. And I had two old World War I blankets that my dad had brought home that were as thin as sheets now. I'm not kidding you. They had no nap left. And we'd go out camping, and even in the summertime, you know, you lay there and the moisture come up through the bottom. Freeze to death at night. We had never even heard of a sleeping bag or a ground cloth, but we made it. And
that was a real close-knit group. Now, I suspect scouting today in small towns are close-knit groups.
That's right. One of the troops that everybody in Angelo, as far as scouting was concerned, used to hate was Troop 52, I believe it is, up at Bront.
Yes.
Man, those guys, somebody said that's all they do is practice scouting, and man, they won the championship several times.
They won the Silver Cup.
Well, they won it several times because of the fact that that's all they did was practice. And all of the troops in Angelo, we were all, you know, pretty well competitive against each other. But when some outsider like them came down, we were all against them, no matter if we had one troop that was doing pretty good. But
were there any other troops from any other towns before you left that you remember participating in anything?
Well, there was a troop from Big Lake that seemed like to me we went to summer camp with them. There was a troop from Fort Stockton that went. I was down at Camp Kickapoo, I think. And the troop from Junction, and then when we went to camp Kickapoo, there was a troop from Menard down there. But I can't really remember too many other troops. I don't remember anybody from El Dorado or Sonora or Brady.
Well, they were having 2 weeks of camp then. And
that's right.
A lot of those came a separate week than
that's right.
That those troops from San Angelo went to.
Well, and they, you know, those dining halls and things that they built would just hold so many people. Now, of course, being a kid, seemed like to me there were jillions of kids at camp. There probably weren't too many. I don't know.
There were over 100.
Well, one year, one camp, seemed like it was Connolly. I was thinking there were about 250, 300 kids up there. It's a big old camp. But now, like Camp Geronimo, the first one we had, there were less than 100 kids at that.
How about the groups in scouting? Weren't you a member of the Zocas?
No.
You were a member of the... Well, Howard, I had one guy told me that he wouldn't join the Zocas because he thought it was a uppity group.
Well...
Social group.
That's right. That's exactly what most people felt like. And then I think a lot of them, I know I really wasn't interested in the Zocas, but a lot of the kids that I thought that would have liked to have joined it, they weren't asked to join. It's kind of a, you know...
Closed-in club.
Kind of a closed-in club. And we felt like that most of the people that were in there were people who were in the upper bracket of, you know, of income. And that we just weren't interested in it.
What was the Cunier Society? Was it active outside of just
well,
initiated
not,
a camp?
Well, they studied it. It was based a lot of like the art of the areas now. It was based on Indian, you know, lore and legends and we made uniforms and drums and stuff like that.
But did you make it at camp or made it in town?
Well, we would work on it at camp, and then we would work on it later. But it just never was as active like the Art of the Air is now. It was always very, very evident at camp, because they would have the members of the Cunier Society, which would do certain things, you know, and put on certain ceremonies. But it was never as active as the Art of the Air.
In other words, it was the Indians at camp, so to speak.
Well, that's right. That's right. And it just, I don't know. I guess Bryce Draper was the one that started that, because I know the Art of the Area was in operation at the time, because it started in, what, 1915 or 16?
Yeah, it started
like
a lot
that.
Earlier than that.
But he didn't, I never heard of the Art of the Area until I moved back to Angelo in 43.
When you moved back in 43 with the, and you got involved in scouting again?
Well, I did in 44. I had been in, I'd been up at, living at Seagraves, and I had a scout troop up there for 3 years. The boy that was talking to Carl yesterday, we used to go to Camp Post up there. And
south of Lubbock.
Yeah. And when I moved back, I decided, well, I didn't care anything about getting in scouting, because I had worked with scouts in East Texas. In fact, when I was in high school, I was working with scouts. And then when I worked for a while over at Longview, I worked with a troop over there. I can't even remember who sponsored. It seemed like it was a church downtown. But
it had to be the Presbyterian Church or Methodist Church.
Well, I can't even remember. But I know we used to meet downtown, and a lot of times we'd get out to play our games, like Hare and Hounds or Chalk the Corners. And finally got to where that they were having some trouble, because one night one of the kids nearly got hit by a car, that they, the police came and asked us if we wouldn't kind of, you know. But
that was back in the,
oh, that was in the
early 40s.
Well, it was, no,
late 30s.
It was kind of in the middle 30s. But I, when I moved back to Angelo, I hadn't been in scouting then, well, up until 40, I guess 43, but I moved back and I wasn't going to be in it. But the friendship class down at the First Methodist Church, which was the young couples class, then decided that they wanted to do something in a special way. So they were going to sponsor a Boy Scout troop and a Girl Scout troop over at Sam Houston School. And they asked me if I would take it. And Leonard Lane and Elmo Curry and Bill Warner worked with me, and we had a good troop over there. We had about, I guess, 65 kids.
What troop number was that?
36.
Troop 36.
Yeah. And
you were scoutmaster?
For 6 years.
I didn't know that.
And then a guy named Tijerina, who had been in scouts in Troop 36. See, it had been over there, and then it kind of folded up. He'd been in the military, and he came back, and he kind of hinted that he'd like to kind of take over the troop again. Well, I was kind of getting, you know, tired of it. So in 1950, he came back, and he took over the troop. It wasn't too long after that a guy named Truett Stone, who was scoutmaster of the First Methodist Troop, Troop 1, had decided that he maybe should, if he's going to be in scouting, he wanted to be in scouting with his church group, which was the Presbyterian Church, you know, the round one over here. So he decided he was going to go over there, and they asked me if I would take the troop, and I said, well, I'll take it till you get somebody, but I just don't want to get tied up again. Well, I had it for 27 years.
What troop? That was Troop 1.
Troop 1, yeah. But
you've written a book about Troop 1, haven't you?
Well, it's Troop 1 and some other stuff, but it's kind of about scouting.
In general?
Yeah. In the early days here, you know, I had a lot of fun, thought that some of the stuff should be reported. Of course, some of it we couldn't put in there, but...
stuff you could.
But
you don't want to get it published, J.T.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis Griffin. Did you ever know Lewis?
Is he the one that was with the sound system here or something?
No, no. His dad is a professor out at college.
No, I don't know.
But anyway, Lewis was quite a very, very active scouting. And he was in Troop 1. He took the report to the governor a couple of years. But anyway, he's with a bank in Houston. He is an engineer. He goes out and checks buildings and houses and stuff like that. And so he kind of got interested in seeing about getting the book printed. In fact, I wrote him a letter yesterday and told him to find out about getting the thing published. I don't think anything will ever come of it. You know, it's probably won't rank along with the Iliad and the Odyssey.
It'll rank along a lot about my book.
And,
it records the history, though.
But I had a lot of fun writing it, and a lot of the kids that have read it, or read copies of it, they all want one. For instance, Randy Roundtree told me he wanted 25 copies. I said, what do you want with 25 copies? Well, he had a bunch of friends, but I don't think anything will ever come of it. But, you know, I had a lot of fun in scouting. It really meant a lot to me.
Apparently it meant a lot to a lot of kids your age from what I think there's nothing that I've enjoyed more than meeting all these scouts that I've met in the last couple of years.
Well, as I said, really, that was the only extracurricular activity that was available. Now there were some kids whose folks were pretty wealthy would send them to summer camps, you know, down around Kerrville, down through there in that area, but most kids just couldn't go. And it really provided an outlet for the kids, and I think most of the ones that I knew in scouting turned out pretty good. You had a few clinkers that ended up probably in the slammer, but most of the kids were.
And we had some in our troop. Bill Lebetkin, I remember very well, was in our scout troop, and he ended up in the 10.
Well. And the thing after I finally had been scoutmaster for several years was I finally realized that scouting isn't for everybody. It's just like anything else. There's some kids that, I know I had one very, very notable example. I had a family that had four boys, and they were all in the troop. Well, the three older boys all got their eagle and God and country, and the little one came along, and he was quite a swimmer.